I'm going to record this call. Thanks everyone for joining us on this Thursday. We're talking with Hagit Ofran. She is the director of Settlement Watch Project. She'll brief us about various issues relating to what is going on today in Israel. You know, the evolution of this call is in just a few days is testimony to the speed of the Israeli news cycle. Originally, I was expecting Hagit to talk to us a little bit about settlements, particularly the latest developments in the settlement of Beit El, which she will talk about later, and about Peace Now's conference, which took place last Friday or Friday before last. But, you know, things evolved quite quickly in Israel, and what happened was that after the events in Beit El, there seems to have been a revenge attack in a neighboring Palestinian village, the village of Duma. We all know the consequences of that. A family was burned alive there. After that, there was a Peace Now demonstration to protest the violence, the political violence, and Hagit will talk about that as well. And now we are hearing about possibly some measures that the Israeli government will take in order to try to fight this phenomenon of extreme right violence. Before we start, I just want to remind everyone that you're welcome to notify me that you'd like to ask a question. We'll open the conversation to questions in just a few minutes. We'll start with a little bit of a conversation between Hagit and myself. In order to signal to me that you want to ask a question, please dial 5-star. So at any point, you can dial 5-star. You can do it now if you'd like, or at any point during the briefing. And that'll notify me that you'd like to ask a question, and I will have you in the queue, in line to ask your question. So 5-star is the way to ask a question. Hagit, again, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And now, again, we can't hear you that well. You're a little blurry, but I'm hoping that it'll be better as we go along. Let me ask you this. I'll start from where we are today after a very eventful week, or a little more than a week, in Israel. The Israeli government has announced that it is going to take some extraordinary measures in order to try to tackle, to deal with extreme rights, mainly settler violence in the West Bank and beyond. What are those measures, and how new are they, and how effective do you think they may be?
Well, these are very hard and tense days in Israel. The murder of the baby in Duma by Israeli terrorists, we cannot call it something else, really shocked all of the Israeli public. However, the reaction of the government is of course, you know, condemning and saying that it's wrong and all the right words. But the measures that they are talking about are measures that have to do with, first of all, in my feeling, PR. Public relations. There was a cabinet meeting saying that now we are going to take measures of administrative detentions against Jewish terrorists. And this kind of decision is nothing but a declarative decision, because there is no need for a cabinet decision. The law in Israel, maybe unfortunately, allows for administrative detention, and it has been done not only against Palestinians, but sometimes also against Israelis. So it was more of a way of the government to say we're doing something. And then there were all headlines of arrest of one of the heads of those youth, the terrorist youth, I don't know how to call it, and this is to tackle the problem. I think the problem is much more we know that for 48 years the West Bank is under Israeli control but not part of Israel, and Israeli law and the democratic laws and atmosphere does not apply in the West Bank. In the West Bank, there is a regime that is meant to protect the Israelis in the West Bank. And although in Israel you say on the paper you need to do something, it means that according to the laws, we're supposed to protect the Palestinians. But on the ground, the main task of the Israeli military and the Israeli police is to protect the settlers from potential attacks by Palestinians. And whenever there is an opposite where settlers attack the Palestinians, the police would do, or the army would automatically protect the settlers from the potential retaliation. So that's on the ground, is happening all the time whenever there is any kind of attack and the army is present, or when the army is there, is to, first of all, protect the Israelis. That's what they're trained for, and that's what they're there for. So on the ground, we see very little enforcement of law on settlers. But it's much deeper than that. When you have a whole system of construction of settlements that is done illegally without the approval of the government, or with the approval of the government but not official approval of the government, and when we go to the court to force the government to enforce the law, the reaction is to do everything to legalize this illegal settlement. So the real message of the authorities is that there is no real law in the West Bank, that whatever settlers do, they are, first of all, innocent, or they deserve the protection of the Israeli authorities. And that's a deep psychological way of thinking. And maybe it's natural, only natural. I mean, it doesn't mean to be, doesn't have to be evil that we, first of all, think of protection of the Israelis there. But the outcome is evil. And, when we arranged the demonstration Saturday night, less than 6 hours after the killing, we arranged it in 6 hours, and thousands attended in this, because we're actually collecting.
I'm sorry to. I'm afraid we're sort of losing you. If you can move a little bit, it's a little blurry. So maybe you can move a little bit, or just
so maybe I should move somewhere. I don't know.
A little bit, yeah. Maybe let's try and see if it's.
Okay, I hope now it's going to be better.
Yeah. So if you just repeat, you were talking about making a decision to hold a demonstration in Tel Aviv about. A day after the killing in Duma. Just take it from there.
Yeah, actually, maybe in brackets I can say a few words about that event. I think it's the fastest organized demonstration that we had in years. And the show up was very high. I mean, there were thousands in the Rabin Square in Tel Aviv, and the speakers were from the Meretz Party and from Labor Party, and we got a lot of media coverage for that. And I think that the main message that we are trying to convey is that the problem is not, you know, the enforcement of the law on specific events or the lack of resources for the Israeli police to investigate or other questions, but it is the very problem of occupation. And as I described, the lawlessness that has to do with the settlement construction, and as I described the psychology of automatically seeing the Israeli settlers as the us, as the ones who need the protection from the them, which are the Palestinians. In this context, it's almost impossible to have law and order when you have a society, a whole population, Palestinians, that are not equal, that does not have rights, civil rights. The outcome is inevitable that the system is not built to enforce the law on settlers. And on top of all that, you have the political fight in Israel between what we call right and left, or pro-settlers and peaceniks, where the pro-settlers take so many steps or accept so many illegal actions in order to explain why it is important or to protect what settlers are doing. So they have a lot of backing, the whole settler movement, in terms of the way the Israeli discourse is going. So when you have the prime minister to say, I will legalize the illegality, or that it's legitimate to go to court, you know, a few weeks after the final ruling on Bet El, the Supreme Court ruled that the houses must be demolished, and to go again to court and say, please change your verdict. It's something that the government is doing. And when you have that, and it's all part of the political arena, that's also not helping for the authority, for the system, to fight against the settler violence. So, and of all this, you can add, of course, what the incitement that is going on, and the public discourse in Israel is very harsh. And, you know, we've been in the recent weeks very strong and loud in the public media, you know, this demonstration that drew a lot of public attention and thousands of people. And also we published and started a campaign against an organization, an Israeli organization called Honeinu, which is helping those Jewish terrorists, not only by supplying them lawyers, but also by funding prisoners, etc. And this organization is getting a tax deduction from the government. So we launched a campaign now to stop this tax deduction, and we got a lot of support and a lot of and some members of Knesset are picking this and going to continue the fight for that. But as we play this central role, we get a lot of threats and I've no other word than incitement against us. If you look on our Facebook page, and we fight, we try to clean it, but it's almost anything that I write, I don't mind if I get, you know, people disagreeing with me politely, but so many, wishes that I will not live long, or peace now, and all the supporters or leftists will be, I don't know, burned. Things of the sort that is so full in our public discourse, it's not adding at all to the chances to enforce the law on settlers. So I think it's a rather long answer to your very simple question, what do I think the chances to really enforce the law to stop this terrorism? And unfortunately, I believe that deeply, and to end those actions, we must end the occupation. But because it's not going to happen in the next 2 days, I believe, we need to start, you know, with enforcement of law and enforcement and stopping the incitement, etc. But it's very hard when you're still allowing occupation to go on.
Thanks. So, you said that this was a long question to a short answer, but it actually raised several more questions. So I'd like to ask you a couple of things. First, if we go back to the and let me just remind people that if they want to also ask a question, please dial 5-star. That'll alert me to you're wanting to ask a question. I'll put you in line to ask. Again, to do that, dial 5-star at any point. You can do it now if you'd like. You mentioned the fact that the settlers are receiving, including violent settlers, government support, government backing, government sympathy. First, I wanted to ask you if that is the case more so with this government, which seems to be more pro-settler than previous governments. But also, I'd like you to talk a little bit about the specific case of Beit El. There were two houses, two structures that were built illegally on privately owned Palestinian land, and if I understand correctly, the state attorney, who in the past took positions that were strictly, how would I put it, who tended to defend the rights of Palestinian owners, in this case actually sided with the settlers and tried to sway the court, the Supreme Court, from ordering the demolition of these two homes. So maybe just a little bit about the specifics of the case of Beit El, and then if you can, a little more in general, what this case teaches us and where we stand with the atmosphere that this government creates vis-a-vis the settlers.
I don't think that the state attorney has changed its mind and in those cases is representing the government, and he needs to on the one hand court.
I'm sorry, Hagit, you're breaking up again.
I'm sorry.
You started saying that you don't think that the state attorney is changing his course. You said that you think
yes.
He represents the government. But then you broke off, so if you could pick it up.
So I said, maybe you hear me well now, I don't know. But the state attorney, is representing the government. And whenever there is a legal way to allow the government's policy, you will find it representing it. And I think what's changed was the policy of the government, and we see it very clearly. We started our specific campaign or petitioning to court against illegal construction of outposts and settlements, specifically on private Palestinian land. We started that systematically about in 2005 and 2006. And at the time, the reaction of the government to court was always, it's illegal, we are taking care of it, we will evict or demolish, etc. We just need more time, we have priorities and things of the sort. That was the cases all the time. But we saw a dramatic change after Netanyahu was elected in 2011. Netanyahu, or the government of Netanyahu, declared in court that now they're going to legalize whatever they can legalize, and only when it's no way legally to make the construction legal, then they will demolish, and it means that it's on private Palestinian land. And we saw since then a row of decisions by the government to actually legalize outposts. And this legalization is not only just allowing them to stay, but actually to establish a new settlement, to plans for construction, for making it bigger. And we counted 25 new settlements that were established in recent years, and nobody heard of it because it was done in way of legalizing illegal outposts. And that is the policy of the Netanyahu government. We published a few months ago, we published a report about this, about the legalization of outposts. And in the case of Beit El, we saw a similar situation. At the beginning, when the petition was filed, it was, if I'm not mistaken, before 2011, before the change in the policy, and it was, the government said, we will evict it and have no way to legalize it. But then the policy changed, and the government is saying, actually, you know what, this land was seized for military use in the 70s, so actually we can make use of it, so actually we can plan and we can legalize it. So we ask the court not to order the demolition because we legalized it. And that was the claim in the last few days. But the court said, you had your chance. We ruled twice in this specific case that it should be demolished. And we cannot allow you to make, fun of our verdicts. And the court was very clear to say, if you want to build there, you build legally and do it in the right way, and not by, allowing those criminals to build illegally. So the outcome was that there was a demolition, but the settlers, instead of doing it and accepting the rule of law, the settlers fighted against it and tried to put a lot of pressure and threats on the government, that there would be violence or there would be coalition problems, etc. And our Minister of Education of the State of Israel, Naftali Bennett, went and visited those houses, as if it's legitimate, and to say that it shouldn't be demolished. And if you have your minister, education minister, to say that, it's a real problem, I think, democratically. Eventually, what happened is that there were some, clashes between settlers and the police. And I think what happened to the settler movement is that they are feeling in recent weeks under attack, or they lost a lot of their sympathy in the Israeli public. And of course, this horrible killing in Douma made a lot of damage to their to their name, or to their less popular in Israel. So they're trying to fight back, or they're trying, to say, don't incite against us. It's not all of us. We are good people, etc., etc. And actually, I think to some extent, maybe we can see positive outcome here, that the Sefer are not really the most popular people in Israel, even though they're trying to say that they are the only legitimate Zionists in the world, and you know, trying to delegitimize any other Israeli or non-Israeli that is disagreeing with them. We finally see that this sympathy to the settlers is not built in with who they are, and that sometimes there are ways to break this very negative feeling that the government is trying to that if you are pro-Israel, you must support the government, whatever the government is doing, or you must support the Israeli occupation, which is not true, and it is far from being the legitimate and democratic way of speaking. And I think we've been specifically in the last few weeks very strong about, you know, showing that there are many Israelis that are not taking this for granted, or that don't agree with the Israeli government's policy, but are very devoted Zionists or very devoted patriotics, want the good of this country. And it is important that this discourse, this argument is alive, and that is not, you know, only that we are being attacked and we need to fight back, but sometimes we are able to defend themselves a little. And yes, sorry for speaking and asking them. Yeah.
No, that's fine. We will soon open the conversation to questions from our participants. If you want to ask a question, please dial 5-star, and that will alert me to the fact that you want to ask a question, and I will take your question soon. Just one more question I wanted to ask, which stems from something you said earlier, and I'm actually relaying a question here that I heard from a reporter a couple of days ago, and that reporter asked me the following. The stakes seemed to be low in the case of Beit El. In other words, we're talking about two structures built illegally on privately owned Palestinian land. They weren't even finished. They were still in the process of being constructed. And yet the settlers fought very hard with pretty severe violence to prevent the authorities from carrying out the court's order, including you know, throwing objects at the policemen and soldiers, something that is very unpopular in Israel, and they're quite concerned about their popularity, about their image in the eyes of the Israeli public. Why would they use such tactics when they know that they have no chance of winning, in the sense that they really can't prevent the court order from being carried out? Why use such force to confront the law enforcement authorities while they know that it's harming their image in the eyes of the Israeli public? Is it worthwhile for them?
Well,
why do they gain?
I think it's very clear, because they know that those threats and work, and they, although they damage their prestige, they do the job. And when they were threatening, the government was working to give them the compensation back. And when the project in Beit El was demolished, or part of it was demolished following a court case, the government gave the settlers enormous amount of money to develop Beit El, approved 300 units, new units, in addition to 90 units that were built by the government for the settlers, and in addition to other compensations. And at the same time here, projects that the government is trying to move forward, and they have problems in moving forward projects in settlements, especially when in current situation there is no peace process going on. So there is no of Netanyahu, of as if is is in favor of two states and he wants peace and it's only the Palestinians that are not coming to the table. Now all those excuses are gone, and it's very hard for him to explain to the Israeli public and to the world why are you building in settlements. And when this is the case, the threats of violence by settlers allow the government to move forward settlement projects. And we saw the 300 units that were approved following the Ulpana in Beit El got their approval the approval to be implemented following the Beit El riots. And in addition, there were a declaration on another 500 units in East Jerusalem to move forward. So sometimes I think it's like a game, you know, that Netanyahu is pretty much in favor of building in Beit El and in East Jerusalem, but he needs the excuse. So the extreme right would do the pressure and do what is needed in order to make Netanyahu, you know, okay, we will tear this down and you will act, you will behave, and in return we will give you more construction. This is actually proven that the pilots work. And if I may add, the Duma village is about 3 kilometers from an outpost called Adey Ad, and another few outposts near Shiloh, Kida, Esh Kodesh, and Achia. All those outposts were established in the 2000s, made their lives from violence, and they started with building illegally and then with taking over lands around their settlements. And then when Palestinians wanted to go and cultivate their lands that are not far from the outpost, they would go and attack them and scare them away. And when they complained to the Israeli authorities, as I explained previously, the authorities would first of all say, okay, it's really your land, Mr. Palestinian. You would have to go only with escort or with coordination with the army so that we can protect you from the settlers. And suddenly the lands are not open for the Palestinian, only when the army will allow. And that's in a good case where the army helped the Palestinian. In other cases, the lands are just taken, and the Palestinians have nothing to do with that. And we're talking about thousands of dunams or hundreds of acres that are being taken by those violent outposts. And for more than a decade, there is no real enforcement on those outposts, and they grew dramatically from being several caravans to being houses, build permanent homes and infrastructure. And with the help of the government, in this way or another,
there are about 100 of those in the West Bank now, right?
Yes, but talking specifically on Yeah, and when I was mentioning specifically those that are close to Douma, because this is a story that we've been seeing in this specific area with very, very extreme settlers, that they know.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's a horrible, horrible fact, but it's part of the occupation.
I'd like to remind our participants that in order to ask a question, they should dial 5-star, and I will then unmute them to allow them to ask their question. We have a question from Ahmed in area code 603. Please go ahead.
Oh, yeah. Thank you for Hajit. How many homes have been ever demolished, built by the settlers over since 67 war?
You heard the question, right, Hagit?
The question, how many homes were demolished? Not so many. We can easily count them, and it's few dozens, and it's all with specific circumstances, usually with a package of compensation from the government, unfortunately.
And the homes that are being demolished, homes that receive these demolishing orders, some of them are homes in illegal outposts. Those are settlements that were built without government authorization, without the approval of the government. Or sometimes they can be homes inside actual settlements that are official settlements, but have been built illegally, either just without approval or on privately owned Palestinian land. Is that correct?
Yes, it is correct. And the government has been doing its utmost to so many of the illegal settlements. And I wanted to say that it's very, funny to talk about illegal settlement while we know that the whole idea of settlements in occupied territories is illegal according to international law. But, within the Israeli discourse, there is Israeli law system, there is a way to build settlements. So we are talking about legal and non settlements.
Right. Maybe the correct way to put it would be official settlements, ones that were approved, officially authorized by the government, and unofficial ones or something like that. So when we're talking about illegal outposts, what's illegal about them is, of course, the fact that they were not legally approved by the government. That's in terms of the lingo. Hagit, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the role of peace now, the role that is played in recent weeks. I mean, we've seen two actions that were taken. One of them I thought was extremely impressive, which was the conference that peace now convened Friday before that, in Tel Aviv. Just a few words about why you do that and what kind of role it plays in the progressive community in Israel, and then maybe a little more about the importance of the rally that you had on Saturday after the Douma attack.
Yeah, well, we arranged, it's the fourth row, conference for the Israeli peace, and we try to bring in as many as possible from the peace camp, and we've been able to successfully bring many members of Knesset from the Labor Party, from Shelly Yachimovich, Amir Peretz, and others, and along with the, of course, Meretz Party, but also Arab, the United Arab List, and Oda and Aida Tuma, and they're all sat together in the same panel room, and audience also, and less young, from many things, all sat together and discussed our common agenda. And it was, you know, this specific conference that we ever had, we took a, we decided, we gambled.
Okay, I'm really sorry, but you're breaking up again. So you said that this was the...
We, the largest, I don't know if you hear me still, it was the largest conference, most successful ones until now that we had. We took a gamble. We decided to pick a bigger conference.
Yeah, you're saying that you decided to pick a bigger venue. I'm repeating what you're saying because I think you were breaking up before. So maybe you can either move a little bit or try something. But what you're saying is that this was the fourth year in a row, the largest one, and you made a gamble by picking a large venue in Tel Aviv, hoping that you would be able to fill it, and you did. So yeah, maybe you can take it from here. I'm sorry that I keep.
I think we tried. It was more like a JPEG conference, you know, with a big panel, with panelists from the first row, journalists and politicians and activists, and then to several smaller panels, and then back to plenary with. We estimate that there were more than 1,200 people in this conference, and for Israeli peace conference, I think it's one of the biggest that took. And I think it was the very important. And we thought that first of all that this camp is still alive and kicking. Also. That we are able to bring in all of the variety of the peace camp, and you know, it's not that there are disagreements between many groups in the Israeli left, but they all, you know, came and talked and discussed those differences, and I think it was very important. Also, we filmed all the conference and we put it out on our Facebook page. Parts of it are also translated. You can see it on our Facebook page also. And people to see those discussions afterwards and to publicize themselves what they said. They also share it, and we get to many, many more people. So, and I think it's because of our great team and peace now is the movement of the Israeli peace camp that really can unite the camp. But also, I believe that it has to do with the public atmosphere. And the fact that we're being attacked all the time, and I'm not talking only about now as such, but this camp as a whole, and people are sick and tired of that, and they want to show that they are not alone, that they are we have the power, and I think such conference has a very important role. Its context. Which was important, but also with the very, you know, the atmosphere and the feeling that we are part of something bigger than what we think. And, you know, many times I speak with people about the situation in Israel, in talks like this one or in other occasions would be very interesting. You know, we still have the occupation, settlements going on, the public in Israel, so many racism going on. So, but I have to say, there are so many people in Israel that are fighting against all these bad things. And see them, the APM website and...
Okay, I'm really sorry, but you're breaking up again. Let's do this. We have one person waiting, and he's been waiting quite a while to ask a question. I'd like to ask Ben Schneiderman to ask a question. We'll Hagit, if you can answer it quickly, and then we'll wrap it up because really the quality of your phone line is not that great. So Ben, please go ahead with your question, and I'll give Hagit a chance to answer it quickly. Go ahead, Ben. You with us, Ben? I guess not. If Ben Schneiderman is, if you can hear us, because you...
Yes,
no. Yes, go ahead, please.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Okay, good. I wonder what the reaction is in Israel to the current debate between the president and the prime minister on the Iran deal.
You get that, Hagit?
Hello?
Hagit, are you still with us?
Are you talking to me or?
No, I'm trying to get Hagit. I'm really sorry. I want to apologize to all the participants in this call. We have a bad line.
Do you think you can hear me now?
I can hear you now.
Can you hear
Go
me
ahead.
Now?
Yeah.
I'm sorry. I'm very sorry. I couldn't do it in another place tonight, so I'm very sorry. The Iran issue in Israel, of course, it is covered by the press, but it's surprisingly how much or how little is discussed about the very content of this deal, and the only subject that is matter is how isolated Netanyahu is in terms of his objection to this deal, and how what is the status of the connections or relations between Israel and the United States. That is the subject that is actually discussed in the Israeli public, and not so much the content of the Iran deal. And I think it shows something deep or important that we live in Israel with deep fears, and Iran is one of our biggest concerns. But from the day-to-day life, we don't. I mean, most of the discussion is not about how bad or how dangerous this agreement is. I mean, I think that Netanyahu is trying to portray it as a very, very dangerous deal, but most of the Israeli discourse is not about that. It's about where are we in terms of our relations with the U.S. And I think it's important to know. I think that the Israeli public is not so hard to persuade that there are many positive aspects of this agreement, not to say that it's actually a good one. And I believe that it's not so hard to persuade the Israeli public about that.
Good. Hagit, we'll end here. We actually are almost at the top of the hour. Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, but I just wanted to say something that I tried to say before.
Sure, please do.
It's important to me for me to say. I was saying that sometimes those kind of talks can be very, very depressing and how bad the situation is. However, I want to remind us all that there are so many people in Israel and also back in the United States that are fighting to change the situation. And the situation cannot be so bad when you have so many people that are fighting to change it, and there is still hope, and that all the time, and I hope that we will all see more of it in our lives soon.
Absolutely, I agree with you, Hagit. You know, I was really touched. I followed over the weekend the outpour in Israel of solidarity with people both who were expressing solidarity with the Palestinians over this horrible murder of the Palestinian baby and the injuring of his family members, and the horrible attack, the stabbing attack in Jerusalem at the gay pride parade. And there was a real outpouring of solidarity and of demonstration against this murderous sentiment of you know, ultra nationalism and ultra conservative in Israel. So I definitely agree with you, and I think it's something that we can definitely take, both be proud of and draw a great deal of hope from, that there still are many, many people in Israel, the majority, I'm sure, who not only reject such attacks, but actually go out and demonstrate against them. So with that, I will thank you, Hagit. I want to apologize to our participants for the quality of the telephone line. We actually tested it earlier and it was good, but it happens. Hagit, thank you for joining us. I want to wish everyone a good weekend and a happy summer. And we'll talk to you soon again, Hagit, I hope.
I hope so too, and I'm sorry for the deadline.
Yeah, no, that happens. Thanks again. Please join us for upcoming briefing calls, and check out our website for more information and analysis on the various issues that we deal with, including settler violence. We have quite a bit about that on our website. I just posted an article that I wrote a couple of years ago about this issue. So if you go to our website, check our blog, there's quite a bit about these issues there. That concludes the talk. Thank you again all for joining us. Thank you, Hagit, and goodbye.